It's This Week in Chicago History, sponsored by UChicagoMedicine.org. Good morning, Anna DeVlantis. X marks the spot. That's what we're talking about here, right?
I remember this so well. You remember when airplanes used to take off at Meigs Field? It was like 20 years ago, 2003 is when Mayor Daley pulled that middle of the night maneuver. You're right. Took the bulldozers from the city, you know, city crews moved in. They shut the airport down and yes, carved those giant X's right there on the landing strip to make sure that no planes would ever land there again. There was a plane in the sky that had to be diverted. There were planes on the landing, you know, in the area of the Meigs Field area that had to figure out a way to get out of there. But no planes took off from there ever again. Mayor Daley was interesting because for years, he was never bashful about his dream. His idea was to turn that lakefront airport into parkland. He wanted it to be a park. And he'd been talking about doing it forever. So, you know, that was transparent, but not transparent how he went about doing it with the bulldozers in the middle of the night. You know, why deal with pesky regulators from the federal government and all that red tape when you can just pull that maneuver? It's interesting because it did. I know you were working in news at the time. I was too. It just caught everybody by surprise. Like, what did he do? Mm-hmm. We pulled a clip from, I think it's Channel 5, just everyone reacting the next day about what had happened.
Daley destroyed the runways at midnight to do an end run around lawsuits and court delays.
To do this any other way would have been needlessly contentious and jeopardize public safety, prolong anxiety among Chicagoans for months and maybe even years.
The mayor and Governor George Ryan agreed in 99 to keep MIGs open till 2006 or maybe 25 years in exchange for federal legislation to expand O'Hare. Daley said when the O'Hare deal stalled in Congress, the MIGs deal was dead.
No. The agreement is gone. The agreement is not in existence. There's no federal legislation.
The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association President Phil Boyer said Mayor Daley has no honor and his word has no value. The sneaky way he did this shows he knows it was wrong.
The great Dick Kay.
Yeah.
Mayor Daley said it was for safety reasons, right?
You know, it's so interesting because later when he knew that he was taking heat from federal regulators who were going to fine the city and sue the city, and you heard all what Dick Kay just said, you know, he said, well, you know what I really did this for was for safety reasons to prevent a 9/11 style attack on Chicago. And he said that with a straight face, even though no one believed that that's why he did it. I mean, it was really his plan all along, way before 9/11. And so, you know, ultimately, Bob, the city got sued and had to pay fines. Over $1 million was probably the bill for the city. But Mayor Daley won. I mean, it was never an airport again. It's a concert venue is really the way I know of it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah,
yep.
There you go.
This week in 1958 was a big one for Bob Newhart, wasn't it?
Such a great story. He's such a great Chicago story. I know you talked about him recently on the air, but you know, so 1958, young Chicagoan, fresh out of Loyola University, he starts a job that changed his life, you could say. Bob Newhart was working for a copywriter for a film and television producer here in Chicago named Fred Niles. He had started out working as an accountant after school, and that didn't work out because he said he always rounded up and he really didn't care about being too detailed. And so you know, he was writing copy now, and he'd started the series of stand-up routines that he wrote for radio that just became so famous. So many of our listeners will know and love his famous telephone calls, you know, Bob Newhart playing the straight man, dealing with, you know, some outrageous scenario. It's great because, you know, he went and he made these for fun while he was working as a copywriter with a buddy of his, and he submitted them to radio stations, and it basically launched an incredibly successful career for him. Back before Bob Newhart, the actor, was even known, or back before the Bob Newhart show, his album of comedic monologues reached number one on the Billboard charts. And I think we pulled a sample here of Bob Newhart back in the day.
Supposing the Wright brothers had gone to a new product corporation to market their new invention called the aeroplane. I think if they had, a guy from the sales promotion firm would have talked to him on the phone something like this. Hello, who is this, Orville? Where's Willard? Wilbur, I'm sorry. The only way to make any loot on it is to start booking passengers as soon as possible. Right. How many could you handle, do you suppose? Five on either side. That's top, huh? Yeah. Well, I mean, that's your end of it. I don't want to get into that. Listen, how are things coming on the plane? 105 feet, huh? That's all. Do the 12 guys still have to push it down the hill? They do, huh? Well, see, that's going to cut our time to the coast. I mean, if we got to land every 105 feet. You can... All right, I'll be talking to you, Orville. Goodbye.
Yeah. That is still funny. And he grew up in Oak Park, right?
Oak Park, you know, went to St. Ignatius, and, you know, just it's just so cool to think about, you know, how just he fell upon this in some ways, and his talents were just, you know, able to be spotlighted in so many different ways. Ed Sullivan Show, he was a regular fill-in for Johnny Carson. Mary Tyler Moore, and her husband were the ones who decided that Bob Newhart needed his own show, you know, so they launched the Newhart Show, and it was a huge success from the start, big hit, but he went on to be, of course, a famous character actor and has starred in everything over the years. Just really incredible.
Way back when, he was an accountant, and I just talked to mine about taxes. I can tell you that the Newhart was a lot funnier than my guy. It's Anna DeVlantis with This Week in Chicago History. More to come in a moment here. WGN. Cha-cha, real smooth. This week in 1999, Chicago made a little dance history. Anna?
You know, Bob, it's funny because that song, I remember this, it was played by every DJ in the city. There was a period of time when you just, not a wedding, not a bar mitzvah or prom was complete until you heard the cha-cha slide. Remember, it was just, everyone got on the dance floor and it just was such a crowd pleaser. You know, it's fascinating to think that that was written by a Chicagoan who was, in fact, a DJ. DJ Casper was his name. Also, his real name was William Perry. Interesting to note, the other William Perry. But in 2004, I guess you could say that song went global because it was a huge hit in the U.S. It became already, and then it became a huge hit in Europe as well. Interesting backstory here that DJ Casper wrote that song for his nephew who taught step aerobics at Bally's Total Fitness in Chicago. And he wanted some music that would go along with his workout routine. So he said, you know, he created the song. And eventually, you know, kind of redid it and such for a radio play because DJs started playing it and then it got played on GCI and it became a hit nationally after that. It's just one of those things that gets people moving and get them to dance. But to think that its origins were an aerobics routine, I hadn't known that myself until I started looking into this. I thought, wow, this is interesting. Also, a BBC radio guy had heard it here and he started playing it on BBC One. And that's what they say but led it to become a chart topper in the UK. So pretty cool.
So
story.
Went global. Wow. And this week in Chicago history, way back in 1876, the Spalding Sporting Goods Company was founded. Now, I knew Wilson was based here, but I don't know the history of Spalding.
You know, so many sporting goods companies were, and this one's got such a fascinating history. 1876, it opened its doors here in Chicago. And the backstory on this, for people who don't know, Albert Spalding was a former star pitcher and manager for the Chicago White Stockings before they were known as the Chicago Cubs. And Spalding is actually credited with standardizing the early baseball, making the first regulation baseball for the game. He manufactured the official ball for Major League Baseball until the 1976 season, but he started it all with that. He also created, interestingly enough, Bob, he created the world's first baseball glove. And Spalding's reputation as such a tough player, such an amazing player, made it okay to use a glove. Before that, you used your bare hands, Bob, and you liked it. And the glove was, you know, it was okay then. But he moved into other sports too. Excuse me. And it was interesting because he did basketballs and even hockey pucks for the NHL.
Interesting that Wilson kind of took over the baseball gloves. But as you say, Spalding used to make, well, they even made hockey pucks for a while, didn't they?
Yeah, it was like the NHL contracted him to make the hockey pucks for years. He supplied basketballs for the NBA. He even did the arena football, the official football for arena football, made one of the first ones in the 1887, I think he made the first football and just became a real name for manufacturing balls of all kinds for sports, but also really credited as being one of the first sports superstores because they sold everything at Spalding for every sport.
And finally, we have some toy history to tell you about.
All right, Bob, surely you had Tinker Toys. Please tell me, I know you were deprived of so many popular toys as a kid, but did you have Tinker Toys?
No, I told you, my parents would say, go out in front of the house and look for twigs in the street. Play with those.
Well, maybe you inspired the first Tinker Toys because they kind of look like twigs. That's what they were, kind of. You know, that's really, it's just a bunch of pegs and sticks in a cylindrical, you know, container. And there you go. You had your Tinker Toys. But, you know, it's interesting because they survived so many years. They've been around since 1914 when they started in Evanston, Illinois. On Ridge Avenue, a toy company was founded. And the Tinker Toy Wonder Builder set was launched in very, very simple, you know, but known even to this day for inspiring creativity in kids, because there's no right way to do it. You just build what you want. And it's still popular to this day for that reason. But you didn't have it.
I guess so. On Ridge, did you say that they were originally manufactured?
Ridge Avenue. I think the 2000 block of Ridge Avenue in Evanston, where he launched it. And it's since been voted into the National Toy Hall of Fame. It still makes top 10 lists because a lot of educators say that they're really good for kids to just sit and create and create whatever they want. So it's very simple toy that Bob didn't have, but they're really good at inspiring kids' creativity.
Thanks for another reminder about my dysfunctional childhood.
Sorry, Bob.
And more next Wednesday. Anna DeBlantis this week in Chicago History. Thank you, Anna. Have a good day.
Talk to you then, Bob.